The Democrat plan to steal the 2024 election.
Mr. Reagan.
For those of you who don't have a lot of time, I'm just going to put my theory out there right at the beginning of the video. Then I will go through and I will explain it. I believe that the Democrats are going to try to keep Donald Trump's name off the ballots in Democrat-controlled states in 2024. I believe that this is their end game, and I believe that they have all the tools they need to execute this plan, and they have already taken measures to set this plan in motion. For those of you who think this is unlikely, this has already been proposed and written about in the New York Times, the Washington Post, Newsweek, and New York Magazine. I am 100% convinced that this is the Democrat plan, that it is entirely within their power to do it, and that they will get away with it if we do not immediately develop countermeasures. If you have never shared any of my videos before, if you never plan to share another video of mine ever again, share this one. Share it with everyone you know, because I think that exposing this plot is critical to the future of our republic. So in order to properly explain this plan, I need to explain the foundation of it, which is, of course, the Trump indictments. I think that many Republicans have been distracted by the idea that the Trump indictments are a way to discredit Donald Trump, that they are an attempt to brand him as a criminal. And certainly that's a nice side effect for Democrats, but this is not the reason for the indictments. And in any case, it hasn't worked. If anything, these indictments have actually improved Donald Trump's brand, and they have almost guaranteed his nomination as the Republican nominee in 2024.
Donald Trump is using his mounting legal problems to increase his popularity among Republicans in the race for president.
He took to Truth Social Thursday saying, "Need one more indictment to ensure my election."
But this doesn't matter to Democrats. It doesn't matter that this has helped Donald Trump, because damaging Trump's reputation is not the point. This is what magicians call misdirection. The real reason for the indictments is to establish a justification for removing Donald Trump's name from the election ballots. Many months ago, I proposed a theory on this show. This theory seemed pretty crazy, but I thought that it was important enough to present it to you. This theory was so wild that even I myself was skeptical of it. My theory was that the Democrats had a plan to accuse Donald Trump of crimes in which the consequence of being convicted carried with it a stipulation that the convicted criminal become ineligible to run for public office. That is, the crimes that the Democrats were accusing Donald Trump of committing all would disqualify him from running for president. Every false accusation was specifically formulated to stop Donald Trump from ever becoming president ever again. I believe that the Russian collusion lie was an attempt to disqualify Trump from being president. I think that the quid pro quo lie about the phone call to Vladimir Zelensky was also an attempt to disqualify Donald Trump from running for president. The January 6th incitement of insurrection accusation was obviously an attempt to disqualify Donald Trump from running for president. None of us had ever even heard the term insurrection before January 6th. Suddenly, it was being used by every so-called journalist in America to describe what happened. Why not just call it a coup? Why not call it a revolt? Well, it's because of this very specific law in America, Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. And this little bit of text cites incitement of insurrection as a crime. And if you're convicted of that crime, there's a stipulation attached that you would then be disqualified from ever running for public office. That's the reason why they were using the word insurrection. They were trying to condition the American people to associate Donald Trump with that crime. And even the raid on Mar-a-Lago, the accusation that Donald Trump inappropriately took documents from the White House, that was also an attempt to disqualify Trump from becoming president again. And the reason I know that the documents accusation was made specifically for that purpose is that Mark Elias, a lawyer for Hillary Clinton, tweeted about this specifically. He let the cat out of the bag. He couldn't keep it to himself. He had to brag about it. And by doing so, he exposed their plot. And it was because of that tweet that I started to connect the dots. I realized that the Democrats had conducted a meeting at some point. They probably wrote down on a whiteboard a list of crimes that they knew would disqualify Trump from ever running for president again. They probably had a bunch of law students, you know, flipping through law books, trying to find anything that they could that would potentially disqualify Trump from becoming president. So they made up their list and they started going through it. And they started trying to accuse Trump of everything on that list. Now, the reason that I was so skeptical of my own theory is that in order to capitalize on these accusations, the Democrats would actually have had to indict Donald Trump for these crimes. They would have had to try him in a court of law for these crimes. And at the time, I wasn't convinced that Democrats would be willing to be so openly corrupt. I mean, there's no question in my mind that they would act in a way that was totally corrupt, but to do so in a way that was so obvious I mean, that seemed like a risky move to me. I wasn't sure that they would be willing to, you know, openly expose their own corruption. Now, of course, we know. My crazy theory was right. And Democrats are willing to be openly and obviously corrupt. And it was because I was so spot on about that that I am now convinced that I am totally correct about my new theory. And keep in mind, this is just speculation, but as I said, I have been proven right about everything up to this point. So I think it's a pretty safe bet that I'm right about this next bit as well. Now, convicting Donald Trump of the crimes of which he is currently accused will be a simple task for corrupt Democrats. You just need a corrupt judge, you need a jury of Democrat voters, maybe bribe or blackmail some jurors, and boom, Trump is convicted. Easy peasy. However, there is a problem with this plan. We currently have a Supreme Court that is controlled by a conservative majority. If Donald Trump is illegitimately convicted of a crime, it is almost certain that such a conviction would be overturned on appeal. I can even imagine a scenario in which the Supreme Court takes up a case within like a day and overturns it.
Now, it's the District of Columbia. 90-some-odd% of the jury pool will have voted against him, so they may actually get a conviction from a D.C. jury. But will it survive appellate review and review to the Supreme Court? I do not think so.
Now, I'm not a legal expert. I can't explain how all the details of this might work. But we all know that these indictments against Donald Trump are totally fraudulent. This is political persecution of the worst kind. I have total confidence that a conservative Supreme Court would be able to overturn corrupt convictions easily in each case. But this begs the question, what would the Democrat strategy be if the Supreme Court is able to overturn these convictions and Donald Trump is able to run for president again? This is a question that I don't think anyone has yet asked. And perhaps that's because no one suspects the Democrats could do anything. But never underestimate Democrat creativity when it comes to corruption. Now, I don't know if you've noticed this, but recently, the left-wing media has become obsessively focused on judicial ethics. In particular, they have accused Clarence Thomas of accepting lavish gifts from friends, which they claim constitutes a violation of judicial ethics.
He does have one critical possible Hail Mary remaining. He and his lawyers could try to somehow find a way to kick the case up to the Supreme Court, where the conservative majority would rescue him. That was one of the last desperate plans for Donald Trump's coup back in 2021 to get the Supreme Court to rule in his favor. And we know there is at least one very conservative justice who one of Trump's coup plotters thought would be particularly inclined to help out. I speak of this man, Clarence Thomas. Now, Justice Thomas is probably the most right-wing member of the Supreme Court in living memory. He's fully committed to remaking the country and its jurisprudence in his conservative vision. But the other thing you need to know about Clarence Thomas, and there's a lot about him, is that he's always wanted to be rich. I mean, Supreme Court justices are paid well, but nowhere near as much as a top-flight corporate lawyer.
The job is not worth doing for what they pay. It's not worth doing for the grief, but it is worth doing for the principle.
I mean, you do not get to be a flamboyantly rich guy if you're a Supreme Court justice, not from what they're paying you. But there are a lot of flamboyantly rich guys who do have a real interest in keeping Clarence Thomas on the court. People who share his vision, his right-wing ideology, who want him to rule in line with that vision. Thomas stays put on the court in his supremely important, though, public sector job. And his wealthy right-wing supporters pay for him to live like a rich guy.
A quantum surge in new, genuinely shocking reporting into the secret life of Clarence Thomas. Over the past few months, the American people have learned much about the lavish gifts from wealthy friends, but never quite like this. ProPublica, using an array of previously unavailable information, including flight data, emails, security records, tax filings, and interviews with more than 100 eyewitnesses, published what they call the fullest accounting to date on the generosity that has regularly afforded Thomas a lifestyle far beyond what his income could provide.
They are calling for all kinds of consequences, including just ignoring any judicial rulings that the Democrats don't like.
I think we've been preparing and anticipating for there being these egregious overreaches by members of the judiciary appointed by a right-wing Republican Party. I believe that the Biden administration should ignore this ruling.
So you're saying the Biden administration should ignore this court, but what does that look like? What does that actually mean?
The interesting thing when it comes to a ruling is that it relies on enforcement, and it is up to the Biden administration to enforce, to choose whether or not to enforce such a ruling.
But is that, do we want to live in a world where a government can decide to ignore a federal
court
ruling?
Well, no, of course. I mean, I do think that this, that it raises it a these important questions.
I believe that the Democrats have planned a sophisticated attack on the Supreme Court in order to try to undermine the credibility of the court in the eyes of the public, or at least in the eyes of Democrat voters. And here's why. If they cannot coerce the Supreme Court to do their bidding, then I believe that their defamation of the court, their accusations that the court is corrupt, this will become a justification for Democrat-run states to remove Donald Trump's name from the ballots in the next presidential election. I believe that this is their endgame. Now, Republican-run states will reject this, naturally, and it won't make a difference in the deep blue states. But elections are won and lost in the purple states, in the swing states, the battlegrounds, the toss-ups. And in the swing states that Democrats control, if Trump is removed from the ballots, this would determine the outcome of the election. Donald Trump cannot win the next presidential election if his name is not on the ballots in all of the swing states. And I believe that this is their plan. The corrupt Democrats in DC, they just tell the local governments for every Democrat-run state to refuse to put Donald Trump's name on the ballot, thus ensuring a Democrat victory. And listen, guys, this is a real danger. Presidential elections are not federally organized. They're organized state by state, and each state determines the candidates that qualify for the ballots individually. So each state can autonomously refuse a candidate. I looked up the states that are expected to be swing states in 2024. There are four states of primary concern: Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Arizona, and Georgia. Now, for a candidate to be listed on a presidential ballot, their inclusion must be approved by the Secretary of State in most states. So I looked up the Secretary of States for each of these projected swing states, and guess what? Pennsylvania, Democrat. Wisconsin, Democrat. Arizona, Democrat. Georgia, Republican. But that Republican is Brad Raffensperger, the very Secretary of State in the center of the latest criminal indictment of Donald Trump. For good measure, I also looked up the secretaries of state for some of the more traditional swing states. Michigan, Democrat. Wyoming, Democrat. Colorado, Democrat. If Democrats decide to go forward with this plan, if they pull Donald Trump's name off the ballots in the states that they control, they will effectively remove Donald Trump's name from the ballots in all of the swing states in 2024, ensuring a victory for Joe Biden. And if you're still not convinced that this is the Democrat plan, this strategy has already been proposed and written about in the New York Times. Just a few days ago, on the 10th of August, the New York Times printed an article advocating this very plan. This is a direct quote from the article. Trump is ineligible to be on the ballot, and each of the 50 state secretaries of state has an obligation to print ballots without his name on them, adding that they may be sued for refusing to do so. I dug a little further, and I discovered that this strategy has also been written about in Newsweek, New York Magazine, and the Washington Post. So they're doing it. They are doing it. And again, they will use the justification that the Supreme Court rulings overturning any conviction of Donald Trump, well, that these are illegitimate because the Supreme Court itself, they will claim, is corrupt. This is why they've been trying so hard to defame Clarence Thomas. This is why they've been trying so hard to discredit the Supreme Court. Now, look, I would love to be able to present to all of you a grand solution for this problem. Unfortunately, I'm not a lawyer. And you know, I believe there's probably a variety of legal maneuvers that would prohibit states from removing Donald Trump's name from the ballots, but I don't know what those things are. However, it is critical that the conservative political operatives, the constitutional scholars, and the top lawyers who are all in a position to do something about this, it's critical that they are aware of this Democrat plan. And it's critical that they develop countermeasures to stop it. I would love to be in the room with the Republican strategists and great legal minds that would come up with these legal maneuvers, but I myself cannot contribute as I am not a legal expert myself. However, there is another piece to this puzzle that we can fight against. That is the attempt to discredit the Supreme Court. The claim that the Supreme Court is corrupt is purely a propaganda campaign. This is something that is carried out by the leftist media. And mark my words, they will only ramp up the accusations against conservative justices in the coming months. You will soon see this all over the news. They will do everything they can to convince Democrat voters and moderates that the Supreme Court is corrupt. And with this piece of the puzzle, there is a way we can fight back. We must expose this plan. If swing voters know about this plan, they will be inoculated against it. We have to ensure that as many Americans as possible are aware that the Democrats' plan is to keep Donald Trump off the ballots in swing states in 2024 by trying to delegitimize the Supreme Court. So look, I do not ordinarily ask you guys to share my videos, but share this video. Share it with all your friends. Share this video with everybody in your family. And let's get this message out to as many Americans as possible. Democrats are no longer playing by the rules. And it is crucial that we expose all their lies, all their corruption, and all of their dirty tricks. And by the way, the Democrats have already executed this plan once before. In the election of 1860, they refused to put Abraham Lincoln on the ballot in all the slave states. Lincoln won that election anyway. Well, let's hope this story ends the same way. Well, that's it for me. And remember, it's not that liberal friends are ignorant. It's just that they are all utterly corrupt. Good night.
If we lose freedom here, there's no place to escape to. This is the last stand on earth. And this idea that government is beholden to the people, that it has no other source of power except the sovereign people, is still the newest and the most unique idea in all the long history of man's relation to man.
Huge breaking news this week about election fraud. Donald Trump was indicted in Georgia for a broad criminal conspiracy to commit election fraud. Meanwhile, the Gateway Pundit broke a story with new evidence of election fraud, and I am shocked, that the mainstream media is covering the story about Trump, but not the story about the election fraud. We are going to cover it all this week on Wolves in Finance. Now, I read your comments, and I know there are people out there who do not understand why I talk about elections on a finance channel. I think this topic absolutely belongs on this channel. You cannot have finance without free markets, and you cannot have free markets without freedom. Without elections, you are not free. So this is absolutely important to talk about. So let us start with the new indictment of President Trump in Georgia. This is a massive indictment. It basically throws everything at Trump, including the kitchen sink. It claims that everything, including tweets, phone calls, news broadcasts, were part of a conspiracy to overturn the 2020 election. The problem is that there does not seem to be a crime. These are all the same actions that many people have done before to contest elections. There cannot be a conspiracy without a crime. The crime was, allegedly, what Donald Trump calls the perfect phone call. But this call can be interpreted different ways. To convict someone, you have to convince a jury beyond a reasonable doubt that they are guilty. Well, if the phone call can be interpreted in different ways, that gives me some doubt. It's not a crime to complain about an election. That's called free speech, which is protected under the Constitution. It seems to me like this is an extremely weak case brought for political reasons. The craziest thing is that I think this case in Georgia will actually work to Donald Trump's advantage. He's been trying for years to adjudicate the 2020 election in open court. Now he is getting that chance. He will be able to submit evidence showing corruption in Georgia elections and discuss it in the court case televised to the world. Do the Democrats realize that they just gave Trump the biggest possible platform to tell his side of the story? I don't see how he can possibly be convicted after he presents his case that there was actual election fraud going on. What Trump also has in his favor is that each week, more evidence is coming to light about fraud in the 2020 election. Every time this happens, it is proving Donald Trump right. This brings us to the story published last week by the Gateway Pundit. They obtained a police report from Michigan. This was from an investigation that occurred roughly 1 month before the 2020 election took place. The police were investigating election fraud. This was not some small investigation. This was a long and detailed report with the involvement of the Michigan Secretary of State and Attorney General. According to the report, a city clerk noticed that a woman dropped off 8,000 to 10,000 new voter registration forms. That's strange. Why would one person possibly drop off so many forms for new voters? Not only that, when they looked at the forms, it looked like the handwriting was the same on many of the forms, and the addresses listed did not actually exist. Also, the signatures on the forms did not match the signatures on file with the Secretary of State. The police report explains that they showed the forms to an analyst at the Secretary of State's office, and she confirmed that many of the forms were clearly fraudulent. This seems very suspicious. What's going on? You have to realize the Attorney General of Michigan, Dana Nessel, has been saying to this day that there is no evidence of widespread voter fraud in Michigan in the 2020 election. Why didn't she tell us about this police report? It seems like she is lying. Keep in mind that this is the same attorney general who is right now trying to put Republicans in jail for creating an alternative slate of electors, something that has been commonly done in previous elections. So she is prosecuting Republicans for fake election crimes, but ignoring the Democrats for real election crimes. That is corruption. So the police interviewed the lady who dropped off the forms. She explained that she was dropping off the forms as part of her job. She was paid $1,150 per week. Her job was to find unregistered voters. Also strange, she explained that she was paid by prepaid cash cards. I'm not sure that's legal with the IRS. How are they paying their payroll taxes? So the police raided the offices of the company. They found a voter registration operation going on. There was a table covered with voter registration applications, computers, semi-automatic rifles, and pistols. What? Why does a voter registration company need semi-automatic weapons? There was a whiteboard in the room with writing that said, "Hot Topics." And then underneath it, it said, "Weapons in the field." So they were using these guns in their operation to sign up voters. Was this voter intimidation? The police investigation happened in Michigan, but it was clear that this was a multi-state operation. The case was turned over to the FBI, which normally handles multiple state crimes. There is no indication the FBI continued the investigation. The Gateway Pundit contacted the police lieutenant who wrote the leaked police report, and he stands by the report saying, "The report speaks for itself." So this is a confirmed instance of voter fraud that has been covered up by the FBI. The implications of this are very significant. This operation was part of a company called GBI Strategies, which was Democrat-funded and operated out of 20 states during the 2020 election. The report states that the police found GBI Strategies received $1,571,386 from the Doug Jones for Senate Committee and $242,133 from Joe Biden for President. And they received a lot more than that. What is alleged is that rich Democrats were donating large amounts of money tax-free to voting-related nonprofits. This money was then funneled to GBI strategies to get Democrat votes. This is illegal. Political donations are not tax deductible. Why isn't the IRS doing anything about this? To be fair, Democrats have been saying that this story is overblown. The police determined the guns were legally owned and not related to the voting operation. They say that the evidence shows how safe our elections are because we stopped the fraud. They explain that no arrests were made because the FBI took over the case. But here is the problem with what the Democrats are saying. There is actually no way to tell if they did stop the fraud. We need to check if those 10,000 voter applications were actually used in the election. But when the Gateway pundit asked for the application so they could check against the voter rolls, they were denied. 10,000 voter applications are being held in secret by the FBI, and they will not release them because it is a pending investigation. So these may actually have been fake votes that were cast in the 2020 election. We don't know. And for some suspicious reason, they won't let us check. This is where things really get crazy. Since the FBI had this very detailed police report of election fraud, why didn't they do anything? That means that both Christopher Wray and Bill Barr knew about this and sat on the information. It seems like election fraud on behalf of the Democrats was protected. I have a feeling that if Republicans had done this, they would be in prison. Does anyone watching this video doubt that Republicans would have gone to jail? That is what it means to live under a two-tier justice system, and it is not right. It is stories like this that support Donald Trump's argument that the 2020 election was stolen. At the very least, the Democrat leaders in Michigan have been lying that there was no evidence of voter fraud. So when the government says, just trust us, there was no election fraud, I'm not sure we should trust the same people who have been lying. I have more to say on this topic, but unfortunately, I cannot say it on YouTube because they censor anything related to election integrity. This video is probably already getting censored. Isn't it sad that we no longer have freedom of speech in this country? I cannot speak freely about concerns about government corruption. Luckily, I have my own website where I can say anything I want. So there is a part two to this video that is uncensored. It is on my website, wolvesandfinance.com, for members only. Thank you to everyone who has signed up for a membership. For $6 a month, you are helping me to keep making these videos. I'm Zach from Wolves and Finance. Thank you for watching, and I will see you over on the website, wolvesandfinance.com.
Can you tell us what's happening? Where is the state headed?
Well, it's headed to oblivion, and people are leaving to go to places that are what once was known as hell, hot Texas or desert Nevada, that have become paradise in their mind. And we took paradise and turned it into hell. So they're leaving. It was very hard to destroy California, given it's got huge amounts of timber, minerals, oil, natural gas. It has, I think, four of the top universities rated of the top 25 in the world, Caltech, Stanford, USC, UCLA, UC Berkeley, four or five. So it was very hard to destroy that inheritance, but we did. And how do you quantify that? You can use almost any measurement you want. If you use fuel, we have the highest gasoline prices in the United States, partly because we don't develop our own oil or natural gas, partly because we have blended fuels that give marginal cleaner air but are very expensive, partly because we have the highest gasoline taxes in the world. in the United States, partly because our regulations are such, refiners don't want to improve and expand. If you look at homeless people, we have almost half of the nation's homeless people. We have one third of the nation's welfare recipients. 27% of the state residents were not born in the United States, so that posed an enormous challenge of integration, assimilation. We didn't do that very well. Our school test scores are around 45, rated out of 50. We used to be in the top 10. If you look at taxes, we have the highest income tax. I think the governor is now going to sign into a bill 14.3 on top incomes. Highest gasoline tax, and our sales tax, given the local and county add-ons, is among the highest. And so people then ask, and we have the, what do we get in return? And when you look at the schools or crime, San Francisco has the highest per capita property crime rate in the United States. Los Angeles is now one of the most violent cities statistically. If you look at housing per square foot, these homes that you see out the window run between $1,000 and $1,500 per square foot, about 8 or 9 times the national average. If you look at the price of electricity, it's 27 to 35 cents a kilowatt hour. It's unaffordable. And it's non-reliable, and it's dangerous. The grid is ossified, so if you live in the foothills or dry areas with October, November winds, the power lines snap, and then you get these raging forest fires in the Sierra Nevada or up in the northern part of the state or even in the Los Angeles Hills, or especially in the Los Angeles Hills. So it's sad, because when you combine the Sierra Nevada, the Central Valley, the beautiful 600-mile coast, it's one of the most beautiful, fertile, natural places in the world. And under bipartisan leadership with Pat Brown and Ronald Reagan, George Dukmejian, Pete Wilson, even Arnold Schwarzenegger, there was a consensus that if you're going to grow, you have to have infrastructure. So you built dams and aqueducts. And at one time, I know this sounds crazy, but the 99 freeway was not the most lethal per mile driven freeway in the United States. It was one of the most modern. So was 101. So was LAX. So was SO. But they just calcified. They were not developed commensurate with population increase. So the operating theory in California is if you don't do anything, they won't come. So if you stagnate the infrastructure where it was in 1970 for 17 million people, maybe 21 million, then it won't work for anybody else. And if it won't work for anybody else, they won't come. But they did come. They came from very poor areas of the world, because what the leadership didn't realize is that a stagnant California that was aging and its services, its infrastructure was eroding, still looked like paradise to people in Central America or in Vietnam or in Africa. And so they flocked here and they needed enormous help. State services, I think Medi-Cal has gone from 7% of the budget up to 30 or 40%. And so it's just, meanwhile, there was a war on the upper middle class, the entrepreneurial class or the middle class. And they decided that you look at what you pay, look at what you get in terms of protection, security, schooling, infrastructure, freeways, price of gas, price of electricity, and it's not worth the bargain to be in paradise. So they leave.
But do you think there's going to be a point where people will see what you're saying, or are they seeing that already?
Yeah, they're seeing it already. So let's take a normal community that's not hard left progressive, say Fresno County or Kings County or Tulare County, where I live. If you go to an average August afternoon, it's about 108, and you will see people go into the local Walmart, and they're not going there to purchase things. They're going there to find free air conditioning, because they can't afford, even at subsidized rates for being poor, they can't afford to turn on their air conditioning because the rates are so high. The rates are so high deliberately so so that people will not use air conditioning. And they're set by people who live here. Notice in this office, I don't have any air conditioning.
Which we're in Stanford right now.
Yes, we're at Stanford. And so the people who set policy, whether it's on electric prices or fuel prices or the school system, they're never subject to the consequences of their own ideology. None of those people over there at Google or Apple or the state legislature, Nexus, or this very wealthy corridor from here to Berkeley and back, none of their kids of the elite go to private, to public schools, and yet they're the most adamant against charter schools and the most supportive of teacher unions.
So do you think these elite that you mentioned that live in these areas, do you think they control the state policies?
Yes. Absolutely, because of the money. What happened in the 21st century, there were particular people in the bi-coastal area, the East and West Coast, the one looking at the EU, the other looking at Asia, who had marketable global skills. So they woke up on some magical date and they discovered that their markets were not 300 million people, but 7 billion. Now, what they called the losers, the deplorables or the irredeemables or the chumps, they were the people that had muscular jobs. And if they were in assembly or manufacturing, they were outsourced or offshored. They were called the losers. But this area, whether it's Facebook, Apple, Google, Twitter, or Stanford University, they expanded exponentially all over the world. And $7 trillion of market capitalization comes into this area. It's the greatest concentration of wealth in the history of civilization. And that created among the people who participate in those, and they're monopolies. Google, I think, controls 90% of all searches. Twitter and Apple have the same type of asymmetrical monopolies in their particular fields. The people who control that then control the politics because they fund it. So if Gavin Newsom is going to be recalled, they pour money in. If in 2020 it looks like there's a chance that Joe Biden might lose, according to Molly Ball of Time magazine, Mark Zuckerberg infused $419 million in pre-selected precincts to absorb the work of the registrars. And so that's how they use their money, because the operating principle is that the skills, the insight that made us anointed financially and globally have given us a birthright, so to speak, to dictate to everybody what they should be doing, with the understanding that sometimes it might not work out that like we thought, but we're protected by our money and our influence, and they run the state. The money explains their why we have a one-party state. That's not exaggeration. There's not one state Republican office holder. They control, they being the, and it's not the Democratic Party, it's the hard left. They control both the state Senate and the state assembly. And I think they control all but 11 congressional seats out of 53. So it's a one-party Confederate system.
Now, this group of elites that you mentioned that are here with a lot of funds, do you think that they probably are not going to benefit from where the state is headed? Because some of these companies are moving out to go to Texas and other states. What are your thoughts? What do you think is going on in their minds?
Up until the last 2 years, their operative narrative was, we're going to change the state. And we're going to let all the water that was committed to agriculture go out to the sea for fish restoration. And that's not going to affect us because we can always buy imported. We're going to shut down the timber industry because we feel it's more natural to have wildfires to clean out the forest. And when a dead tree falls down, we don't want a logging company going in there and cutting it down. That's not natural. And so that doesn't affect us. And we don't want to tap our enormous reserves of oil or natural gas, because we have enough money to pay 30 cents a kilowatt hour, and we don't drive all that much if we do our private jet system minor expense. However, the last 2 years, when we have one of these rare moments in American history where the hard progressive left actually controls the entire government And by that I mean the U.S. Senate, the U.S. House of Representatives, and the President. And there's no impediment to that. And then they look at the consequences and they think, my gosh, we've destroyed immigration law. And there's a lot of people around here that came up, they don't know how to drive. They get in wrecks and they just leave the scene of the accident. Or, my God, all of the people that are coming out here are not like Herlinda, my maid, or Juan, my gardener. They bring problems with them, and there's so many of them. Or they'll say, and I've talked to them, so I'm not just exaggerating. Or they feel that crime now, with all of the George Soros sort of caricatured district attorneys, we had Boudin, Gascon, that means that they're following people home to Beverly Hills and robbing them, killing them. They're going into Malibu, they're coming out here into Atherton. How dare they do that? So they're starting to see just a little bit that when you destroy civilization, even with all of your enclaves and wealth and private security, you can't protect yourself. And they've pushed diversity, 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 and all hiring and applications. And now, not among the very multi-billionaire elite, but the upper, upper, upper elite, the multi-million, their children are not getting into Stanford or Berkeley. And they'll think, but I'm for diversity. But when you go into repertory admissions, so you take a particular ethnic group and you don't match their numbers in the population, but you say, given the systemic racism of the country, we're going to let in, instead of 12% of this group, 16%. Instead of 10% of this group, 12, that has to come from somewhere. So it comes from white males, and not all the white males can give $10 million donations or athletes. So it's starting, that's another example of their ideology coming back to bite them, despite their enormous leverage, prestige, influence, and wealth.
New details are emerging of corruption by Joe Biden. I don't know why the mainstream media is not telling you about this, but you can actually calculate out the true cost of Joe Biden's corruption and how much it is costing you personally. I'm going to show you how to do that this week on Wolves in Finance. We know some new details now that we did not know before. Joe Biden was involved with his son Hunter with Burisma in Ukraine. This is a big revelation. Before, Joe Biden explicitly stated, "I've never spoken to my son about his overseas business dealings." Now, looking back on this statement, it is a little silly that we all believed this. What was wrong with us? Because fathers speak with their sons all the time about their work. It would be strange if they didn't. So the fact that Hunter Biden was on the board of a Ukrainian oil company when he had no experience is pretty suspicious. Well, we now know that Joe Biden's claim was a lie. He was lying to us. He did speak with Hunter about his foreign business dealings. Last week, Hunter Biden's former business partner, Devin Archer, testified in front of Congress and sat down for an interview with Tucker Carlson. He told us that not only was Joe Biden aware of what his son was doing with Burisma, Joe Biden met with Hunter Biden's business partners, and Joe Biden had conference calls with the executives from Burisma. Devin Archer witnessed conference calls with Joe Biden around 20 times. Wow, that is quite different from Joe Biden's claim that he never spoke to Hunter about his foreign business dealings. Why would he lie to the American people? With all of this new knowledge, it makes Joe Biden's actions with Ukrainian prosecutor Viktor Shokin highly suspicious. Joe Biden bragged that he used $1 billion of U.S. aid to Ukraine to get the prosecutor fired. Now, this would have been fine if Joe Biden had no connection to Ukraine and was simply fighting against corruption. But we know now that the Biden family was getting millions of dollars from Burisma, the company that Viktor Shokin was investigating. So it looks like Joe Biden was the person who was corrupt, not Viktor Shokin. In fact, the released FD-1023 form from the FBI told us that a witness claims Joe Biden and his son were personally paid $10 million to take action against Viktor Shokin. That would be bribery. The form says that when the witness asked the head of Burisma, Mykola Zlochevsky, about the threat from Viktor Shokin, he replied, "Don't worry, Hunter will take care of all of those issues through his dad." Not only that, the FD-1023 form explains that audio recordings exist to prove the bribery and that they are being held as an insurance policy by someone in Ukraine. Supporters of Joe Biden will argue that we do not yet know for sure how much he was involved in the corruption. They will try to say that it was Hunter's business and Joe Biden was not involved. But this new testimony from Hunter's business partner shows that Joe Biden was involved. At this point, we're just arguing about how much. But even if you assume it wasn't a bribe, at the very least, Joe Biden was compromised when it comes to Ukraine. Any way you look at it, he is compromised. And we also know that he lied to the American people. Why would he lie if he did not do anything wrong? Given this information, we can now calculate the cost of Joe Biden's corruption. The cost of corruption is typically hard to measure. If someone in government is taking a bribe on the side, how much does that really affect the average person? It turns out, a lot. The cost of corruption is not just the bribe, it is the decisions that come after the bribe. Instead of doing what is best for the people, corrupt politicians do what is selfish so that they can get more bribes. That is the real cost. I want to emphasize this because a lot of people don't understand this point. Joe and Hunter Biden allegedly received $10 million in bribes from Burisma. The $10 million is not the whole cost. The $10 million was a bribe to make decisions. All the decisions that came after the bribe are the real cost. Most government corruption is hard to calculate, but in the case of Joe Biden, we know exactly how much it was. This whole situation deals with Ukraine, who is currently at war with Russia. Do you realize we have a benchmark example we can compare this against? Russia invaded Ukraine in 2014 under Barack Obama. It is the exact same situation. Under Obama, Russia invaded Crimea in eastern Ukraine. Under Biden, Russia invaded more provinces in eastern Ukraine. Look at the U.S. response in both situations. Under Obama, do you know how much the U.S. spent in defending Ukraine? $0. Do you know how much money has been spent so far under Joe Biden? $113 billion. Well, that is strange. How could the exact same situation go from costing $0 to $113 billion? Does it have anything to do with the fact that Obama was not compromised from Ukraine and Joe Biden was compromised from Ukraine? So that is the cost of corruption. It is the original $10 million bribe plus the $113 billion in bad leadership decisions. And of course, this does not include all the people who have died. We have to ask ourselves, does the $113 billion really reflect the best interest of the American people? Or was it paid to protect Joe Biden from the insurance policy held against him by someone in Ukraine? It wasn't Joe Biden's money he was paying, it was yours. So he doesn't care. He just cares about protecting himself. So how much does this affect you? I hope people realize that this $113 billion is your money. He is giving your money to Ukraine. The population of the U.S. is almost 332 million people. 168 million pay taxes. If we split up the tax bill for the Ukraine war among all taxpayers, that means that each of you paid an extra tax of $672.62. Now you might say, I didn't pay that. I'm here to tell you that yes, you did. You paid it through inflation. You paid it at the gas pump. You paid it through the cost of eggs. You have paid an extra tax of $672.62 to wage war in Ukraine. And for the same exact situation under Obama, you paid nothing. I do not understand why people are not furious about this. But that is not all. We now know that Joe Biden is compromised in the same way when it comes to China. Just look at the leadership decisions that Joe Biden has made that benefited China. Joe Biden has sold off the U.S. Strategic Petroleum Reserve, a lot of it directly to China. Joe Biden has allowed China to build a spy base in Cuba, 100 miles from the coast of Florida. Joe Biden has refused to ban TikTok. He puts climate restrictions on the U.S. while allowing China to pollute as much as they want. He allows Chinese spy balloons to fly over the U.S. He won't hold China accountable for their role in the pandemic. He has failed to enforce the trade agreement with China. President Trump put a deal in place where China was required to buy enormous amounts of U.S. goods. When Joe Biden took office, China just stopped following the agreement. And Joe Biden did nothing. In 2021, China had only bought 57% of the U.S. exports they had agreed to purchase under the deal. Why didn't we ask for the rest of the money? We just let them get away with it. Why? Again, we now know that Joe Biden is compromised when it comes to China. We now have a letter Joe Biden sent to Devin Archer directly following a lunch with the former Chinese president Hu Jintao. This does not look like he never spoke to his son about his business. It seems like he was very well informed. Just to be clear, it is illegal for a vice president to have a business doing foreign deals. But that is exactly what Hunter Biden was doing. You have to ask the question, just like what was alleged in Ukraine, does someone in China have a tape recording about bribes to Joe Biden that they can use as an insurance policy against him? It certainly looks like Joe Biden has been making a lot of decisions about China that are not in the best interest of the American people. How much are all of these bad decisions costing us? Once again, we can calculate this. And just prepare yourself, because it is a whole lot worse than Ukraine. In the trade deal with President Trump, he set hard targets. China was required to buy a specific amount of U.S. goods. We can see how much China actually paid against their obligation. Keep in mind, there is a lag with this data, so all of this data came out after Trump had already left office. In 2020, China was supposed to pay $227.9 billion, and they only paid $135.2 billion. A similar situation happened in 2021. Once Joe Biden became president, it's like China just started ignoring the agreement, and Joe Biden did nothing to stop them. We are losing roughly $100 billion per year to China. We can forecast this out to the end of Joe Biden's term, and it will cost Americans $529 billion. If Joe Biden is reelected for another 4 years, his corruption will cost the U.S. over $1 trillion. That is the cost of corruption. So let's add the Ukraine corruption of $113 billion to the China corruption of $529 billion. That is $642 billion. This means the impact to each taxpayer is $3,821.43. You are paying this amount for Joe Biden to be corrupt. How are you not outraged about this? I think it is important to note, this is not just a Joe Biden problem. China has done this with a lot of people. China will identify powerful people in the U.S. in multiple industries. China will pay them a lot of money, and then they will implement favorable China policies while screwing over the American people. One of the main reasons wages have stagnated in the U.S. is because all these wealthy people are taking bribes and selling you out. We should also note there is a difference between China and the Chinese Communist Party. It is the Communist Party that is the problem. There are a lot of Chinese people that do not want to live under a tyranny. They want democracy and freedom. It is the communist leaders that are causing the corruption. So how do we fix this? It's really easy. You get rid of all the people doing the corruption. It's very easy to point out all the people who are pro-communist China. We need to replace them with leaders who will put America first. In the case with Joe Biden, that would have saved you $642 billion. But now the question is, who's going to arrest Joe Biden for the corruption? Who arrests the president? This is a conundrum. The Republicans control the House, but the Democrats control the Senate and the president. So even if there is concrete evidence of Joe Biden's corruption, the Republicans cannot impeach him without the Democrats. This is the same thing that happened to President Trump. He was impeached by the Democrat Congress, but not by the Senate. Fast forward to today, the same thing is true. If Republicans impeach Joe Biden in the Congress, it still would not pass the Senate. We are in a stalemate until 2024, and then the people get to vote. I have mentioned before that Roger Stone announced his prediction that Michelle Obama is going to be the next Democrat nominee for president in 2024. People have mixed opinions about Roger Stone. A lot of people think he's crazy. Whatever you think about him, he has been at the center of American politics for a very long time. When he says something like this, he's been speaking to people behind the scenes who would be involved in these decisions. So you would be silly not to take what he is saying under consideration. What I think is happening is that people in the Democrat Party are working behind the scenes to get rid of Joe Biden. They don't want him to run again. We are not done yet uncovering all the evidence of his corruption. As more evidence comes out, he's going to be taken out by his own people. Now I want to hear from you. Do you think that Joe Biden is corrupt? Let me know in the comments down below. And don't forget to hit that subscribe button. There are more important videos coming out soon that you don't want to miss. Also, a big thank you to everyone who's been signing up for a monthly membership. I'm a small channel, and it is tough when my videos get demonetized and shadow banned. Your membership for $6 a month helps me so much to keep my channel going. You can go to wolvesandfinance.com to sign up.